So at this point, I mean, you have to be wondering, at what point do we price in this volatility, whether it's the Fed, whether it's Ukraine, Russia? Why are we still seeing these wild swings today?
Well, I think we're seeing the wild swings today because of the uncertainty in Ukraine. Will the invasion, if you will, go even further? What kind of export problems we'll be having with precious metals, with industrial metals, also with some commodities out of Ukraine and out of Russia. So, in a sense, what's going to be hurting the US? Because what causes investors to get really scared is the potential for a financial crisis and or a recession. And so it's I don't think that that is something that's around the corner, but it is something that investors are beginning to worry about.
So then when you do see a lot of investors then hitting the panic button at a time like this, what sort of opportunities do you see? Where are the safe havens to be found in a time like this?
Well, Jared was showing the three best performing sectors, energy, not surprisingly, because of the 20% rise in prices that we have been seeing for oil. But we see also that consumer staples and healthcare do well. In defensive times, the old adage is when the going gets tough, the tough go eating, smoking, and drinking. And if they overdo it, they have to go to the doctor. So it's these defensive areas where the demand for the products and services remains fairly static that seem to get most investor attention.
And so for investors that are looking across the spectrum right now, and we're trying to kind of digest to the best of our abilities as well, if there is still any of that investor appetite to buy on a dip that really does not have in sight right now a bottom at this point in time, as Jared was laying out a moment ago.
Well, I think, yeah, the question is there are now a lot of stocks that have been falling. We saw the list on Jared's whiteboard talking about Tesla, about Amazon, about Apple, et cetera, Microsoft coming down by 2, 3, up to 7%. And so the question is, sooner or later, they're going to become attractive. And our belief is that many of them are already beginning to look attractive, particularly in the semiconductor and semiconductor equipment space, where we're looking at companies that have fallen into bear markets, but also now trade at below market multiples that also have buy or strong buy recommendations by CFRA equity analysts. And if you're somebody who, in a sense, likes to wear belt and suspenders, just remember that a portfolio of 50% tech, 50% staples rebalanced annually would have given you 96% of tech's CAGR, but with a 40% reduction in volatility.
So the institution side is one thing, but what about on the retail investor front and where we're tracking some of the flows there, particularly to understand where retail investors who are trying to understand what the best play is here, where they still have the stomach to navigate the volatility and the chop that we're seeing right now, or where some have headed for the exit, quite frankly.
Well, I think for most retail investors, the best thing that they can do is to stop their emotions from becoming their portfolio's worst enemy. Because most of the time, I get calls that from people saying, "I'm thinking about just selling everything," and my feeling is, no, don't do that. Because by the time you do end up selling, the market probably will be bottoming and working its way back higher. So really, put together more of a shopping list if you are a retail investor who is more income oriented. Then take a look at those stocks that have fallen on hard times, but have a good consistency, a good track record of raising earnings and dividends, what we call the S&P Dividend Aristocrats, that might be offering now a dividend yield of 3.5-4%, but still have payout ratios of maybe 80% or lower. Take a look at these kind of opportunities is what I would recommend.
And Sam, as we've been talking about, stocks are now in a correction. Is the market volatility now a compelling reason for the Fed to dial back its hawkish tilt and perhaps not raise rates as aggressively as some market participants had previously been pricing in?
Well, that's possible. I think the market really, I mean, the Fed really wants to focus on employment and inflation. And because we have seen most recently the 7.5% headline rise in CPI, our expectation is the February data will be even worse at 7.8%, and the core number won't peak until the March reading. So the Fed certainly feels as if it needs to raise rates. Since 1990, we've had five rate tightening cycles, and in none of those periods did the Fed start with anything but a 25 basis point hike. So our thought is they'll do the same this time, probably have three rate hikes before mid-year, and then two more by the end of 2022. So they're going to do so, but then take the pulse of the economy to make sure that they don't over tighten exactly at a point in which the economy is likely to be slowing because of tensions overseas.
Well, and to that point, I want to follow up on another point that you made earlier, which was that a recession may not imminently be around the corner. But when you have the Fed walking this very fine line on policy, inflation running at 40-year highs, and now these geopolitical tensions, how many of these dominoes would really need to fall in order to tip the U.S. economy into a contraction?
Well, we have had periods in the past. 1956, we had the Suez Crisis, we had the Hungarian uprising, and at the same time, we had rising interest rates, and then we ended up with a bear market. Ditto in 1968, we had the Tet Offensive in Vietnam, we had rising rates, and we had then a bear market, and the same with the OPEC oil crisis of 1973. So it doesn't necessarily mean that we're out of the woods and that this is always going to be a short-term downward move that you should take advantage of. Obviously, sometimes like a boxer, if you get in the way of a combination punch, as we're seeing right now, it could drop you to the mat.